Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of True Crime on Easy Street. I'm Katie Givens. I'm not a lawyer.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
So we're still all dusting the fun off ourselves from Kelly's big Halloween party.
Yes.
This past Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Kelly, would you like to give everybody who's listening just the 20-second version of how much fun we all had?
So much fun. Spooky. Fire pit.
You knew I was going to talk about this.
Beverages.
Chili.
Chili.
The chili was amazing.
Chili dogs.
Chili dog was
You brought me one today
tier.
And stuck it in the fridge.
I did.
That's lunch for me. I can't wait.
Yep. Candy. Mm-hmm. Did I miss anything?
Yes.
The bullet points. What? Socks.
Oh, yes.
I got socks.
Trick or treat game.
Wheel of tricks or treats.
Yeah. For the third year in a row, I got treat and I got to pick and I got socks.
Socks.
So I love socks.
Yep.
And I have three pair that Kelly got me.
Yep.
Not on purpose, but that's who ended up with them.
I think the biggest trick was Jake spun and got the anti-diarrhea medicine. But I told him, I said, you know what?
Couldn't happen to a nicer fella.
That's a treat if you need it. He agreed.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. You don't need it until you got to have it. I was going to ask, we should have done this last week, so tell me if you want to skip over this. I was thinking favorite candy bar of all time.
Oh, just quickly. Sure. Yeah.
All right, Kelly, you go first.
Reese's Cup.
Yeah. Katie?
Wow. Why is nothing coming to mind?
Oh, wow.
Kit Kat for me.
Kit Kat.
Oh, no, okay. No. Yeah. I like cookies and cream bar.
Oh, the Hershey's
all
cookies
right.
and cream.
Good,
good one.
We should have done it last week and all of the lead up to Halloween, but I forgot.
That's all right.
So, I have a shout out.
Go ahead, please.
Our very good friend, my very good friend, Neil Lee. Bumped into him a couple of weeks ago at Easy Street. He was there with Daniel Johnson, who does not listen to the show. So shout down to Daniel Johnson.
Come on, Daniel.
Tell him that in person.
But shout out to Neil Lee and his wife, Amy. He said that, you know, their girls play sports a lot. And so they travel. And when they do, they listen to the podcast.
Well, hello.
So shout out Neil and Amy. Neil is one of my favorite people in the world.
Lovely family. Lovely family. Two beautiful girls. Mm-hmm. Very athletic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We spend a lot of time with them.
Ellison is on the same volleyball team with them. Mm-hmm. And they play softball, I think. The Lee girls do.
Oh, yeah. They're softballers over there.
Yeah, big time. So they travel a lot.
Yep.
I bumped into Caitlin Jolly Gossett just a couple of days ago. And, Katie, I know something that you don't know.
Oh,
or maybe you do.
I don't think so.
Our good friend Kelly Turner is going to be a guest on Beyond 21 later this month.
I am.
Very nice.
I am.
So what are you guys going to talk about?
No idea.
Caitlin was very excited.
I don't know.
So what do you mean?
I don't know what the topic is.
You guys are just going to wing it?
I don't know.
It sounds like a yes on the winging it.
I think I've given you all the information I have.
Yes, Scott. Quit trying to get information.
You'll just
always
have to
love
listen.
A spoiler.
I'm
too.
A journalist. I can't help it. Yeah. Even a half-assed one wants to know some basic facts.
I've told you everything that I can.
Understood. So the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism would probably want me to tell everybody this. I feel like since they're a sponsor.
Yes.
The Center Christmas Parade is Thursday, December the 5th at 6 p.m.
Okay.
Right down Main Street.
Okay. You know, you can get out there. The little coffee shop there is usually open during that time. Get a hot beverage
And Kelly mentioned before we went on the air that Halloween is your favorite holiday.
My favorite.
And it's over now. And you said that you're left staring down the barrel of Christmas.
I am. That's exactly how I said it.
So here it comes,
exactly
right down Main Street.
How I meant it.
On December the 5th. I feel like the chamber would be okay telling you that if you want to get in touch with the city to find out more about the parade, possibly to enter it with a float.
Yeah.
256-927-5222 is City Hall.
Are we ever going to enter the Christmas parade?
Absolutely not.
And have a float.
You know, sure is a lot of work. We were talking about that the other day.
You guys had a great one last year. The Easy Street had a great one last year.
And I helped none on that because I...
Were you on the
float? You can't do everything.
No, I was in class that night, but I don't have class on Thursday this semester, so I should be
so
there.
So you're going to be able to join the parade. I really enjoy the Christmas parade. I like being on Main Street with everybody.
I do too.
It's a fun time.
I leave work early that day.
You don't stick around?
Just to get out of the way. Oh. I mean, you know, I can't get the car out of the parking lot if I wait until they put up
the
roadblocks.
Let's get a table there outside of the coffee shop, and the three of us sit there with a hot beverage and enjoy the parade together
this year. Can we heckle the Easy Street float when it comes by?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to get stuff to throw at it.
Tomatoes?
Instead of And we're going to throw stuff at the Easy Street Float instead of them throwing candy at us.
All right, let's nobody tell Shane about this because I want him on the float just so I have something to aim at.
Okay.
Good. Oh, I mean, there couldn't be an Easy Street Float.
Of course not. Yeah, I didn't even know why I bothered to say that.
I mean, he is Easy Street, right? Yeah, can't do anything without it, but I'm excited. Do you know, Katie, if Easy Street is going to have a...
They were talking about it the other night.
Okay.
And Shane was a no, and then people were sad, and then I think he became a yes.
Okay, there you go.
So I can't wait. I can't answer the phone for the next month if Shane calls because he's going to want me to come and help. So I'm out on that. So we'll tell him.
You know what, Scott?
In January.
You should sit on the back of the float with one of our mics and your headphones on.
Just sit there.
Like you're in the podcast.
Pretend like I'm just totally disconnected from what's going on around me. Like I'm sitting there telling.
Yeah. Like maybe you're reporting. Maybe you're being a journalist.
All right. Now you're just being crazy.
All right. Here's another thing. Uh-huh. The other podcast that you do.
Yeah.
Why don't y'all just do that live from the float as you're in the parade and just roll down the street with it?
Don't say that to Shane.
I'm totally going to.
Well, then I'm going to call your family and we're going to have a nutcracker conversation.
Dang it.
I don't know if y'all
You didn't
can
tell
do
me that.
That
was in confidence.
I know it's not.
I don't know if y'all can do that podcast to the masses. Is it like available for children to listen to?
No.
It's available for them to listen to. I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
It's 18 and up.
Yeah, definitely. 21 and up.
Is it?
It should be.
Really? That's an extra.
Well, I mean, we're sitting at a bar drinking.
That's a
we don't want to encourage underage drinking
there, isn't it? NC-17.
I wouldn't go that far.
I was about to say you can say whatever you want at the theater at 18.
Yeah. Well, okay then.
So 21 and up makes me a little nervous. Then
let's ratchet it back down to 18.
Let's
I'm okay
do that.
With
that. Okay, 18 and up.
But we're not doing it. Don't say a word.
Oh, I'm
going to
say
that,
a word.
Well, then you're going to suffer the consequences.
I'm trying to gauge in my mind if it's worth it or not.
Yeah, you let me know what you decide. I guess I'll find out. Right?
You'll find out if it's worth it or not.
All right, guys, not just yet. We're going to ease into this today, but our story today takes place in the year 1994. And speaking of 1994, I did a little math.
Okay.
And if I did it right, Katie was 1 year old in her poopy diapers in 1994. Right?
I mean,
I was 24 and just out of college in my poopy diapers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, fun. That's a long story. We'll tell it later. And you would have been what, 15, 16?
15.
17, 15. Okay. Yeah. I forgot what year you were born.
79. So,
is that it?
Mm-hmm,
okay. So 94, I remembered a lot of this stuff from when I was in college, or I was still in Tuscaloosa. I wasn't a student anymore. I had graduated in 93, but I still lived there for a couple more years. And I had just gotten over trying to figure out how to balance perfectly learning and leisure
in a
college town. And it was tough, but I did get my diploma, like it says in the bio on our webpage. Don't ask to see it because I lost it years ago.
Good grief.
But it's out there somewhere.
Okay.
So unlike a lot of the stories we talk about on this podcast, all three of us were living and breathing air right here on planet Earth when this story took place.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was a freshman in high school.
Okay. And I was, like I said, just out first ever real job in 1994.
Yeah, I was just hanging out somewhere.
What month was this in 94?
The story that we're going to talk about today takes place in October of 94, but that's a perfect segue.
I was a sophomore.
Yeah, then. I was okay.
Perfect segue
won.
Because the first thing we're going to do is set the table
for
the year 1994.
Yep. Take me back, Scott. This is back in the day, my high school days.
Here we go.
We did get a comment on... Spotify.
Oh.
Where someone had said, I may be in the minority, or, but I love the Set the Table segment.
Great. So thank you, Spotify.
Kevin Green and one other person.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I'm sorry that I did not.
This is for you.
Take the name down. But yes.
Right. I would like to think my high school history teacher would be appreciative.
Maybe that's
of
who
this.
Commented.
Maybe it is.
Maybe.
Sarah Benefield, love you.
No, I don't think it was her.
Okay. On January the 19th of 1994, the coldest day, there was this big, huge cold front all across the East Coast. The coldest day ever recorded in the city of New Whiteland, Indiana was recorded. You guys want to take a guess at how cold it was?
20 below.
Negative 40.
Katie was closer. It was negative 36.
Ooh.
Very cold.
I can't even imagine those temperatures.
Me either. On February the 12th of 1994, Edvard Munch's painting, The Scream, was stolen from a museum in Oslo, Norway, on the same day that the 1994 Winter Olympics began right down the road in Lillehammer, Norway.
Oh, distraction while they
I think so. All the cops were down the road.
Where is that painting now? Was it ever recovered?
It was recovered in May of that year.
Oh, okay.
So they got it back.
Got it back.
On March the 21st, 1994, the day after my 24th birthday.
Okay.
The Steven Spielberg film Schindler's List was the big winner at the 66th Annual Academy Awards. 7 Oscars in total, including Best Picture and Best Director.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I would say.
Katie Givens, have you ever seen Schindler's List?
I've seen Schindler's
List. Okay.
Yep. Schindler's List, tough one to watch, mm-hmm. but
I've only ever seen it once.
Me too, mm-hmm. but necessary, and I understand all the awards.
Yeah, mm-hmm. totally. On a sadder note, mm-hmm. on March the 27th of 1994, the biggest tornado outbreak of the year occurred in the Southeast, including the tornado right down the street in Piedmont, Alabama, that killed 22 people at the Goshen United Methodist Church.
Flatten the church.
Yes.
Yep.
And that's about 20 minutes from where we sit right now. You pass the memorial to this day every time you drive to Piedmont from Center on Highway 9.
Yep. I drive that every day. See it.
1 month later, on April the 27th of 1994, South Africa held its first ever fully multiracial election. And that marked the end of apartheid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was when Nelson Mandela became the president. The first democratically elected president of South Africa, and he took office the following month.
Yeah, because South Africa is very white.
Yes, and very minority white.
Yeah.
And they were in control of that country for until then.
Yes.
Just a few days later, on May the 1st of 1994, Formula One fans around the world may recall that championship driver Ayrton Senna was killed when his car crashed at the fastest point of the track when his steering column broke at the Italian Grand Prix in Imola, Italy. He was kind of there's a documentary that's coming out on November the 29th that you can watch about the life of Ayrton Senna. And he was a lot like the Formula One version of Dale Earnhardt Sr., who was killed a few years later. But he was, Ayrton Senna was very brash. He was very outspoken. He was very good. And he was always pushing Formula One for more safety.
Mm.
So it's kind of a sad irony that it was. But after he died, much like after Earnhardt Sr. died at Daytona in 2001, there was really this push in the series, NASCAR and Formula One, to really work on enhancing the safety of the cars.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that documentary is going to be terrific, and I cannot wait to watch it.
Formula One's really been getting its like airtime. It's very popular right now.
Yeah, I think they're into like season 3 or 4 on Netflix of a season of a series where they follow the entire Formula One season.
Yeah,
and that really built up the popularity of Formula One in this country. Now there are 3: Las Vegas and Texas and Miami had Grand Prix last year. And I think again this year.
Yeah, I know Miami just had theirs.
Mm-hmm. On a much happier note. After over 15,000 workers had toiled underground for 7 years, the Channel Tunnel opened up beneath the English Channel and connected England and France for the very first time.
That breaks my brain on how that's, you know, works.
Yeah. I don't know how you dig a hole 25 miles long and not spring a leak.
Mm.
Good grief.
And it was that same day that the Channel Tunnel opened that they found Munch's painting, The Scream.
Oh. Where was it in the channel?
I don't think so.
Okay. That would have been really cool.
I think it would have destroyed it, right? I don't know.
Not if it's in the channel. It's dry in there, isn't it?
I thought you meant in the water park.
Oh, no. Mm.
Yeah. On June the 17th, 1994.
I should have said tunnel, in the tunnel.
Yeah, you should have said that.
My bad.
Yeah, you said the channel, not the tunnel.
Okay, well, the tunnel.
On the 17th of June of 1994, former NFL superstar running back O.J. Simpson went on a run of another kind in a white Bronco with his buddy Al Cowlings driving the car. I remember exactly where I was that day. I walked into my friend David Outlaw's apartment. Yes, his last name is Outlaw. And he gets a shout down too because I don't think he listens.
David.
I walked into his apartment and he said, sit down, shut up. We ordered pizza and beer. Watch this.
And so
for the next 4 hours, we watched this thing unfold.
I believe that KT had a Bronco exactly like that. And
it was white?
I think he had owned it less than a month before that happened.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, it was just like that.
Oh, that's too funny.
And seriously, he should have held on to that vehicle.
Well, he would still have that to this day. It was his favorite vehicle, but it actually randomly caught fire in our driveway one day.
No.
You can't make this up.
Oh.
Anyway, if you want to hear about our version of what happened with the O.J. Simpson trial, that is season 2, episode 24.
Yes. And you can tell exactly what we think about OJ.
Yeah, he did it. On June the 5th, on June the 5th of 1994, Jeff Bezos founded Amazon in his parents' garage. And as of this morning, he is worth $208.6 billion. So I would say that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's after giving half of his money to his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Oh, expensive divorce, huh?
Yeah. I mean, this guy, he has more space rockets than I have socks. And you guys know I like socks.
He has space rockets?
Oh, yeah. That's Blue Origin. It's his space faring venture.
You know, I'm not brushed up on my Bezos knowledge.
I just did.
You know, where rich people just pay to literally get into space and come back home.
Yep, that's it.
Good grief. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not going to catch me. If I had Bezos' money, I would use it to sit right here. Like, I do not want to go to space.
You should have an even more comfy chair.
I have no desire to go into space.
I would have.
I don't like movies about space.
Not really.
I mean, I don't count Star Wars and stuff like that. I'm talking about, like, I haven't watched, what is it, Houston, We Have a Problem?
Apollo 13.
Not watched it.
Got it.
Too much anxiety. Don't.
There's a new documentary on Netflix about it.
Don't want to watch
even
it.
Even more anxiety. I watched it. Don't.
How about those astronauts that are just stuck in space right now?
They just got back.
Did they? My palms. Thank goodness.
I thought they weren't
going
to get back till next year.
I can't.
Well, somebody just came back last week because one of them got injured when the capsule landed and had to go to the hospital for a couple of days, which I don't ever remember that happening before.
Goodness me.
In July of 1994, fragments of comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 impacted the planet Jupiter, providing the first ever direct observation of an extraterrestrial collision of objects in our solar system. Mm-hmm. Astronomers had their cameras tuned. You could watch the clouds emanate through the other clouds that are on Jupiter already.
Okay. And what became of it?
Poof.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did we learn anything from it, or we?
We learned that it's gone.
Okay.
Now. I don't know.
When was the Heaven's Gate people? Was this near 94?
I want to say that was around 97.
Was it?
Maybe we should do that one. That's a guess.
Okay.
Oh, that would be a good one.
Yeah. Sorry. Right. I digress.
That's okay. Major League Baseball players went on strike in August of 1994, and it ended up getting the World Series canceled that year. It was the first year there hadn't been a World Series since 1904.
Wow.
Later that month, in August of 1994, in the case Liebeck versus McDonald's, a 12-person jury awarded Stella Liebeck $2.86 million in damages for burns she received from hot coffee spilled in her lap at the drive-thru.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it said in the research that I did that they ended up, McDonald's and Mrs. Liebeck, settling out of court. So I don't know what happened there. I guess there was an appeal, and instead of going on with it, they just settled. But I do remember how much fun the late night talk show guys had with that story.
Oh, God, yeah.
But Leno had replaced Carson, and Letterman had moved on to CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Katie,
they
what were
made
you gonna
so
say?
Much fun of this situation. Yeah.
She was severely injured.
Yeah, she was. She was.
She had to have skin grafts.
Yeah, like so. Like
it was too hot.
When you get into that case, like it's all fun and games until you
but
see
it's
that
not.
She was like that. Coffee shouldn't have been that hot.
That's right.
No, and the only reason, well, I don't know why it was that hot, but I can guess.
I think it was standard practice at McDonald's to serve it super duper hot, so that it would last longer. You know, you would have hot coffee.
But I think
longer.
The hotter the coffee gets, sometimes it gets like a burnt taste.
But also, you don't ask for a refill that might be free.
Could be.
Because you're never going to finish it while you're sitting there.
It's too daggum hot.
Maybe turn it down a few degrees for the drive-through lane.
Well,
I'm sure they figured out something.
It's fine now. Yeah, I get.
Love
McDonald's
coffee.
Is not a sponsor, but they could be.
Yeah, that's right.
But I get McDonald's coffee a lot throughout the week.
I love
and
coffee.
I really like it.
Yeah, but. They should have paid that lady.
This call caused some severe burns in areas. You don't want to be burned anywhere. But
no, she was holding the coffee between her legs when she squeezed too tightly, maybe. And
well, the lid just pops off. I mean, sometimes, yeah.
Speaking of hot food, in August of 1994, Pizza Hut became the first restaurant to offer online ordering.
Oh, wow. Nice job, Pizza Hut.
Yeah. And they're not a sponsor of the show, but they could be.
They could be.
But I used to love Pizza Hut back in the day. Katie, we will explain. When you could actually go in and sit down.
Oh, with the checkered tablecloths
and the stained glass ornament, the light fixture over the table.
Yes.
They had the sit-down Pac-Man game in the corner.
It was a nice restaurant.
The red cups, the salad bar. Listen, if you wanted to take a date somewhere and impress her. In 1987, you went to the sit-down Pizza Hut in Gadsden, Alabama, which is not there anymore. The building is.
I have been to a sit-down.
Have you really?
Pizza Hut, yes. There used to be one. I lived closer to the Georgia line. There used to be one in Somerville, and we would go to it. And it probably closed when I was in high school, but I went before I could drive, like with my grandparents.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, it was the height of luxury.
Yep.
As Edith Bunker used to say, those were the days. Katie, we will tell you who Edith Bunker is later. All right, I'm too making jokes about
that's
Katie
the show
being,
we want to reference here a whole lot.
We're not doing it right. And speaking of checkered tablecloths, mm-hmm. let's get back to setting the table. We're almost finished.
Okay.
In September of 1994, Alabama's very own Heather Whitestone mm-hmm. was crowned the first ever deaf Miss America. Mm-hmm. And she graduated from, she was born in Dothan. Mm-hmm. She graduated from Jack State University. Again, mm-hmm. right down the street.
Yes, she did.
Yep, because she was Miss JSU before.
That's
she
right.
Was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had lost most of her hearing when she was 18 months old, but she went on to, I'm not sure where she is now. I didn't look that far down the road, but we all remember when Miss Alabama became Miss America.
Absolutely.
If you're of the right age. In November of 94, President Ronald Reagan's family announced that he was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, mm-hmm. and he lived another 10 years. He died at 93 in 2004, but that was when we all found out about mm-hmm. President Reagan. On that very same day, it was November the 5th, 1994, 45-year-old George Foreman, who some of you out there may know better from his entrepreneurial escapades, mm-hmm. if you have one of those grills in your kitchen still that
I don't have
runs
one still,
all of the fat off of your burger, that is the George Foreman grill. Mm-hmm. But before he got into that business, he was in the business of pounding people into the ground.
Boxing.
With his boxing gloves. And he did that on November the 5th. And he beat 26-year-old Michael Moorer and became the world's oldest ever world heavyweight boxing champion.
Tough dude.
Tough dude.
Is he the one that all of his children are named George,
that's
even
right.
if they're female?
That's right.
Yeah, they've got George in their name.
That's it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And finally, on December the 15th of 1994, Netscape Navigator, a first-generation web browser, was released to the public and went on to quickly become the most popular web browser of the rest of the 1990s. And, you know, that was about the same time that AOL started mailing out those disks to everyone. You stuck them in your CD drive, and it allowed you to access their servers, and you could chat and marketplace. And it was really when the doors of the internet opened up for a lot of people, and that was 1994. Mm-hmm. Mm. It became something that was in daily use by the general population. And so there's 1994. In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
Now, for today's episode, like Kelly has already mentioned, we need to go back to October of 1994. And we're going to tell you the first version of the story of the tragic reason that we're all here today. Now, before this episode is over, we're going to tell you two versions of this story. And, of course, only one of them is going to be the truth. Mm-hmm. But the story of these two separate stories are the story.
Okay.
Of this true crime. So we have to mention them both.
Got it.
At around 9 p.m. on October the 25th, 1994, in the small town of Union, South Carolina, located in the county of Union in South Carolina, 23-year-old Susan Smith, with her two young boys, Michael, age 3 years, and Alexander, age 14 months, they were strapped into their seats in the back of her 1990 Mazda Protege. It was burgundy. Little four-door car. Mm-hmm. She was stopped at a traffic light in the town of Monarch Hills, which was just down the road from Union. And Union is the county seat of Union County, if I didn't say that already.
Okay. You did.
Okay,
sorry. No, you didn't. You just said it was the county. Sorry.
Okay. So Susan said she was looking out the driver's side window of her car while she was stopped at the light when suddenly a black man with a gun ripped open the passenger side door, pointed the gun in her face, and said, "Shut up and drive or I'll kill you."
Yikes.
Now, here's the description that Susan Smith gave about her carjacker. Black male, 20 to 30 years old, 5 feet 9 to 6 feet tall, dark blue ski cap, blue jeans, blue jacket. Pretty vague, right?
Yes.
Yeah, stick a pin in that. Yeah. Susan did not know the man, she said. She told investigators from the local sheriff's department that he seemed frantic, out of breath. Mm-hmm. She said the man ordered her to drive for about 10 minutes, and then he told her to pull over, and he told her to get out of the car. She said that she begged the man to let her get her children out of the back seat, but before she could, he drove off and said, "I don't have time. I'll take care of them." And then he sped off into the darkness with her two boys still strapped in their seats in the back of her car. Susan told investigators that she watched in shock from the middle of the road as the man sped away. She said family members later said that she was frantic, sick with grief, couldn't believe. She just thought that the guy would let her get her kids out. You don't want the kids, you want the car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let me get the kids and you can go. That's what she said. That's what Susan Smith told everyone mm-hmm. happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
But that version of the story is not what really happened. It would end up taking 9 days to get to the truth about what happened that night to Susan Smith and her two little boys. And we will tell you that story right after these words from our sponsor.
Are you looking for a health option in Cherokee County where the staff makes you feel just like family? Then look no further than Cherokee Family Healthcare.
Cherokee Family Healthcare treats patients of all ages with emphasis on personalized care. Call 256-266-1021 to schedule an appointment or just walk into the office at 819 West Main Street and Center. If you aren't feeling well, and let them help you return to good health.
Connie Geimer and the staff at Cherokee Family Healthcare are accepting new patients, and they accept most insurance plans. So whether you're suffering from a cold, the flu, aches or pains, or want to learn more about weight loss or preventative testing, make an appointment by calling Connie Geimer and the staff at Cherokee Family Healthcare at 256-266-1021 and let them get you on your way back to good health.
Kelly and Katie, let me tell you guys a quick story. Recently, while I was dining at Easy Street, I met a man from Georgia who told me that he and his wife were visiting the Weiss Lake area, planning to relocate here permanently when he retires soon. I told him the first thing that came to my mind, call Greg Oliver at Go Realty. The number is 256-504-3847. Greg is the owner and the broker at Go Realty right here in Cherokee County. If you're thinking of moving here or anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, if you're looking for property anywhere in the area, call Greg. He has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he's ready to help you find exactly what you're looking for. He's got 25 years of experience in the real estate market. Go again and look at that complete list that he currently has for offer. That's Greg Oliver, Weisslake.com. So visit the website or call Greg Oliver at...
What's that number again?
Thanks, guys. 256-504-3847.
As we move into our holiday season, the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce wants to remind everyone to shop local.
Cherokee County has some lovely shops that you can patron throughout the holiday season. Get any kind of gifts that you need. Scott, what kind of gifts do you need?
I don't really need anything, but there are plenty of things that I want, and you can get a lot of those things right here in Cherokee County. You can get a great meal at one of the many restaurants that is a member of the Chamber of Commerce. It's as simple as filling up your gas tank at a local station before you go out of town to do some shopping, if you have to leave town, but we hope you don't. Stay right here in Cherokee County.
Oh, yeah, and my gift that I want you to get me, Scott, you can definitely buy local, so I'll let you know about that later.
Well, you're going to ruin the surprise.
So we want to challenge all of you to make sure to do as much shopping as you can this holiday season right here in Cherokee County.
And if you need more information, visit cherokee-chamber.org.
Guys, we want to let you know that don't forget that Easy Street is now open for lunch 5 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday at 11.
Great lunch menu.
Let's do lunch.
Brand new. We've shared it on our Facebook page, and I know that Shane has also shared it on the Easy Street Facebook page, so it's easy to find the menu, and it's terrific. Everything on it.
Yes. What's your favorite thing, Scott?
I like the hamburger steak with the mashed potatoes. The mashed potatoes are better than I can make, and I make pretty darn good mashed potatoes.
No, they are.
They're terrific.
Katie, so what's your favorite?
Yeah.
I like, you can get a flatbread pizza. I also like just the chicken fingers.
Yeah, chicken fingers are great. Best chicken fingers in town. How about you, Kelly?
I like the rice bowl with the chicken and the vegetables.
It's all
the
good.
Yum-yum sauce.
Ooh.
So delicious. You're not going to go wrong. Salad bar's always fresh. Have lunch at Easy Street. You might see us there one day.
Yeah, you never know. 11 to 2 every day is when the menu prices on the lunch menu are...
That sounds right.
That's right. Something like that. Everything that comes out of that swinging door is delicious at Easy Street, we promise.
Yes. Thank you to Easy Street for being our primary sponsor, our main sponsor.
Yeah. Thanks, Shane. Go eat lunch.
Yes.
Yes.
Come see us. Thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. Okay, Scott, so you're going to tell us what actually happened.
That's right. Now, it's going to sound like you've come back for the wrong episode for just a minute. It's going to sound like you have skipped by accident and we're not talking about Susan Smith anymore, but we are.
Okay.
You just have to bear with me for a minute.
Got it.
So there have been a few times through the years, maybe a half a dozen or so, that I have learned that some child of a friend or a family member is interested in writing. And so there are two books that I always think of that I want to give this person. If Cade Gossett is out there listening, he remembers when I gave him one of these books.
Aw.
Years ago when he was 15, 16.
Hello again, Cade.
There are two, like I said, because both of these books, I read them both, and they made me a better writer than I was before I read them. One is titled On Writing. It's an autobiography, sort of, and it was written by Stephen King. Now, stop right there. It's not what you think.
Stephen King is an excellent writer.
Yes.
He writes some weird, strange stuff, but he's an excellent writer.
Yeah. So kind of the first half of the book tells the story about how he became a writer. And then the second half of the book tells you what his daily routine is and what his methods are for creating and thinking and plotting out storylines and character arcs. And it's very interesting.
Turns out some of the older stuff requires things that you may not want to do.
Yeah. Mm. Wait, what do you mean?
Acid.
Oh, that. Yeah, I didn't suggest that to anybody, but just in case, I'm glad to have it in the quiver
now.
Don't
do that.
Now, the other book that I occasionally give to people is the one that we're going to talk about today. It's a compilation of mostly newspaper articles. Most of them appeared in the New York Times, and they were written by a man who lives just down the road in Piedmont, not too far from where Goshen United Methodist was destroyed in 1994. And his book, this book I'm going to tell you about today, includes his stories. He was there in the days after it happened, and his New York Times stories are the ones that everybody read, and they're in this book. This book is fantastic. And I have currently stolen it from the local library and have to give it back, but I bought them another copy that's going to be here next week. I'm going to donate it to the library as well, so they'll have two.
Yeah, because you've written in this one, I can see.
Yeah, I forgot that it wasn't mine and I highlighted some. So
I don't think it's called stealing from the library, right? Is that not how a library works?
It's not stealing. It's not stealing yet. It's not stealing until I never bring it back.
Yeah,
I'm bringing them a new one.
You're getting them a new copy. That is the right thing to do.
It's on the way. Okay, so the guy's name is Rick Bragg, and he's one of my favorite writers of all time. This book is filled, like I said, with his journalistic work. The title of the book is Somebody Told Me. It came out in the year 2000. And this is the book that contains the version of the Susan Smith story that we are going to tell you today.
The truth, right?
The unbridled journalistic truth.
Got it.
Of what happened. Just so that you know, Rick Bragg has also written biographies about Jessica Lynch. Remember her, the POW American soldier? Mm-hmm. He's written a biography about singer Jerry Lee Lewis that Shane would probably love.
I think he might have that book.
It's a great book.
I think someone gave him that book when he was playing.
Well, shit. I'm sorry they thought of it.
Theater in the
when they did Million Dollar Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
I wish somebody else hadn't thought of that because I was thinking I was going to do it. I don't really want to get him anything for Christmas anyway, so screw it. Never mind.
Yeah, he needs nothing.
He's got enough stuff. So in this book by Bragg, there is an entire series of columns in the back of the book about Susan Smith from the stories as they appeared in the New York Times. A couple of them compiled just in the days after the incident took place. Over 9 days specifically, as I mentioned, this is how long this case lasted. It was how long it took the case to be resolved. So I'm going to tell you a large portion of the story today of this true crime through the eyes of Rick Bragg, through the columns that he wrote. The first one was October the 28th of 1994, 3 days after the boys disappeared. And the last column in this section of the book was written in August of 95 after some other things happened.
Okay.
We're not going to spoil it, so we'll get there in a minute. So I'm finished blowing smoke up Rick Bragg's ass, but just believe me when I tell you that he's amazing. In fact, I'm going to give you a quick example of his writing style with the first two paragraphs from the introduction, not of the section about Susan Smith, but just the book in general.
Okay. Somebody told me.
That's right.
An introduction.
I'm about to.
All right, here we go.
Thank God for talkers. I grew up at the knee of front porch talkers, of people who could tell a story and make you believe you had been there, right there, in the path of the bullet or the train, in the warm arms of a new mother, in the teeth of a mean dog. The men, sometimes dog drunk, sometimes flushed with religion, but always alight with the power of words, could make you feel the breath of the arching blade as it hissed, five S's, hissed, past your face on the beer joint floor. Could make you taste the blood in your mouth from the fist that had smashed into their own. Could make you hear the loose change in the deputy's pocket as he ran, reaching for them, just steps behind. The women in my world, aunts and cousins and grandmas and a girlfriend or two, could telegraph straight to your brain the beauty of babies you never touched, songs you never heard, loves you never felt. They could make you cry about a funeral you never saw, make you mourn for a man you never met. They could make you give a damn about the world around you. They had a gift, one the rest of us who aspire to be storytellers can only borrow. Now, as you guys can tell, I don't think that he's borrowing anything. I think he's got that down to his science, and we're going to mention him. We're going to do a couple more passages from the book today, but you can tell.
That was great.
I felt like I was sitting on that front porch.
Yeah.
That's what he does. And if I didn't mention, he won a Pulitzer Prize in 1996 for his coverage of the Elian Gonzalez kidnapping. You remember that from the boy from Cuba? He won a Pulitzer for that.
Wow.
Buried the lead. Sorry, Rick. I meant to tell that earlier. But Rick Bragg's expertise in, among other things, telling a complex story in a simple and yet eloquent way is why I wanted to borrow from his version of the truth about what happened to Susan Smith and her two little boys. The title of the section of Bragg's book that tells this story is titled simply Susan. And here are the first two paragraphs of Rick Bragg's story about the missing boys. This is from an article that appeared in the New York Times on October the 28th, 1994, 3 days after the crime took place. Susan Smith said she stood in the middle of a dark, isolated road on Tuesday night and screamed, "I love y'all," as the carjacker disappeared in the distance with her two children in the back seat. So far, the people of this small textile town in northwestern South Carolina have been unable to pray Mrs. Smith's two little boys home again. Hundreds of law enforcement officers and volunteers have been searching the highways and deep forests of this rural piece of the state, hoping the carjacker released 14-month-old Alexander and 3-year-old Michael. But as of this evening, investigators still had no leads, and the worst crime in recent memory in pastoral, peaceful Union County remained unsolved. That was 3 days after. Okay. It was the first time that the New York Times had picked up on the story, probably because Rick Bragg said, "I'm from the South. Let me go down there and let me go cover this." Okay. Or maybe he was just assigned.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly the circumstances.
They may have, either one, because he is from the South, so they may have said, "This will be for you."
Yeah, he was born, he grew up in Jacksonville, Alabama. The next Rick Bragg article in the New York Times appeared on November the 4th, a week after the first article, and 10 days after the boys had disappeared. And remember, I said that it took 9 days to find out what happened to Susan Smith and her two little boys. So this is the report in the New York Times on the day after we found out what happened.
Okay. So this would be day 10.
That's right.
Okay.
In a turn of events that some people in her town expected but few wanted to believe, a South Carolina woman who had reported that her two little boys had been abducted by a carjacker was arrested and charged today with 2 counts of murder in their deaths. 2 decomposed bodies believed to be those of the boys were found today inside the mother's car, deep under the waters of John D. Long Lake. A portion of the arrest warrant was read to the New York Times. The discovery of the bodies and the arrest of Mrs. Smith came a few hours after she had made the most recent in a string of tearful appeals in front of TV cameras to please someone safely return her children to her.
And I don't think I realized how young she was. 23 years old.
23 years old.
So, and she had a 3-year-old and a 14-month.
And so what happened in these 9 days, between the time Susan Smith was supposedly carjacked and the time she confessed to Sheriff Howard Wells, Susan and her husband David and their families had been all over network television, sitting down for interviews with the morning shows and the evening news programs and holding press conferences, all of them tearfully pleading with this carjacker to return the boys safely. Of all those tearful members of the Smith family who appeared on national TV, it was Susan's tears who turned out to be phony.
Oh.
Hundreds of volunteers had spent those 9 days scouring the woods. Sheriff's deputies and FBI agents spent all that time tracking down what turned out to be one dead-end lead after another. Other volunteers printed and then posted thousands of wanted posters, complete with an attempt at a sketch of the man Susan Smith had described. A 25-year-old black man about 6 feet tall with a ski cap on.
All of these resources just wasted.
Yeah. Yellow ribbons were tied around trees and mailboxes and car antennas all over South Carolina. And after a few days, after it made the New York Times, all over the world. The whole Susan Smith never thought that this case was going to turn out to be anything more than just a local crime.
Well, and because people can rally behind that. Two children, young children, are gone missing. People can all come together and all agree this is bad, yeah, and we want them brought home. That's, you know, yeah, it's not, there's not a lot we can, yeah, right, there's not a lot we can all agree on, but we can get behind that. Yeah. And then you start seeing it in the New York Times, and everybody's on board. Let's yeah, get these kids home. What happened?
So for 9 days, that's what happened.
Oh.
But there was no black man. He was a phantom of a disturbed young woman's mind.
Mm.
There was no gun. The only three people in that car that night were Susan Smith and her two little boys. And I can hear the question that everybody is taking in their breath to ask right now, if they don't know this story, for the love of God, why? Mm. Sadly, the why is pretty predictable. No revelation here, if you think about it. Susan Smith thought she was in love with someone who had recently broken off their illicit affair because he was adamant that he did not want children.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you were going to tell me it was some sort of postpartum from the 14-month-old or the 18-whatever-month-old.
Yeah, 14.
So she thought if she got rid of these kids, he'd take her back.
Oh, right. Wow.
He didn't want to be with you, Susan.
That's right.
He just used the kids as a scapegoat. Yeah.
Because that's a great scapegoat, because usually a woman can't just up and get rid of their children. Yeah. It's the one thing she can't change about herself.
Right. And won't.
And doesn't want to, yes.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
not Susan Smith.
Yeah, you know, oh, you don't like my kids. Well, that's the one deal breaker. I could have done. I could do a lot with a lot, but
yeah,
not that.
Yeah. You don't like my kids? I don't like you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's most mothers. I mean,
that is,
you know,
every woman I've ever met. Susan Smith had failed a lie detector test on day two of the ordeal, but cops who were trying to squeeze a confession out of her overdid it, and she became belligerent and left the office. They didn't charge her because they thought she might be telling the truth.
Yeah.
On day three, the word spread that a man driving a car that looked like Susan's, that matched the description, had robbed a convenience store in North Carolina, but that story turned out to be inaccurate. On the eighth day, with everyone becoming frustrated by the lack of progress in the investigation, the FBI searched Susan's home but found nothing incriminating. Sheriff's Department divers had even searched John D. Long Lake twice in those 8 days.
Why didn't they find it?
They had not searched far enough out into the water from the boat ramp, it turned out. They only went about 40 feet out. That wasn't far enough. On the morning of day number 9, during an interview on the NBC morning show Today, Susan Smith urged her boys to be strong and take care of each other. She stared straight into the camera and then said these words, "Mama and Daddy will be right here waiting for you when you get home."
So they had a dad in their life.
They were in the process of getting divorced.
Okay.
He had found out about the affairs. He had supposedly been physically abusive. They were in the process of going through. So there was some concern that this was some sort of custody dispute. But it was quickly figured out that that was not the case.
But she could have just turned the kids over to the dad. There was a dad.
Yeah.
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 Like, get a divorce. Give him custody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine you're the person she's having the affair with.
Was.
And all of this is happening.
Yeah.
You know what happened. Deep sure. down in your soul, you know.
Yeah.
What did he say? I'm going to assume it's a he. You said there, he. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah okay. He was 28 years old. He was the, his father owned the textile mill where Susan Smith worked.
Oh. Okay.
And he was like an assistant manager, maybe. He was there day to day, but they had fallen in love in the office, but he had already broken off the relationship.
Fallen in love is probably strong.
Not yeah,
love.
It is.
It's
yeah.
not love. Yeah.
Yeah. Lust. Because she ended up sleeping with the dad, too.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
To try and make him jealous at one point.
Yeah. That was a turn.
Yeah.
Let me, can I just do a public service announcement?
Please.
Dads out there, don't fall victim to this.
Yeah.
Don't sleep with your son's affair.
Yeah.
So that that person can get back at him. Just don't do it.
I told you she was emotionally.
Yeah.
Compromised.
I don't think she's the
disturbed.
Only one.
No, there's
in this yeah. situation. But yes, you're but now, right. She is.
Over the course of this 9 days, the media has become increasingly skeptical. They start to think, hey, wait a minute. Maybe the mom was involved. So it's the scuttlebutt on the news programs.
The cops had a suspicion pretty quick.
They did.
You know, it's the Casey Anthony oh. probe.
Mm-hmm. So the Smiths, they had appeared remotely on all of the television networks during those days. And on all three of them on the morning of day 9. So Susan Smith stuck to her story 3 more times that day. Mm-hmm. Later that afternoon, during yet another interview with Union County Sheriff Howard Wells, Susan Smith finally confessed to drowning her 2 little boys after the sheriff told her a lie. The sheriff told her that he knew she was lying because his deputies had been conducting a narcotics roadblock at that very intersection that night, and she fell for the lie.
Well,
and confessed.
Just a little PSA out there. Police can lie to you.
They can.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's not against the rules.
The thing is, if you're telling the truth,
then you'll know.
You're telling the truth.
Yeah.
Nobody can trip you up.
Remember back in the 60s and 70s when every seedy TV crime show that might involve an undercover cop, everybody would walk up and say, yes. Now look, if you're a cop, you got to tell me. And everybody thought that was true for
That's
a long time.
That's not true.
That is total bullshit, everybody. Don't fall for that.
That is totally false. And I think that was on TV enough that that's what made people start believing it.
Yeah, that was a social media meme before there was such a thing.
Yes. Yep.
Meme version 1.0, I guess.
Yes.
Sheriff Wells also told Susan that it was time for her to confess because her accusation that a black man had taken her children was creating a divide in the community, which it certainly was.
Right, right.
It also came to be known that Susan could not have stopped at that intersection because the ground had a sensor in it and she wouldn't get a green light, she wouldn't get a stoplight unless cross traffic tripped the sensor to make her light go red so that they could pass through the intersection. And there was no one else there.
Okay.
So there was no red light for Susan to stop at. But the sheriff's lie had worked. Susan Smith confessed to the sheriff and then finally, crying real tears, asked him to give her his gun so she could kill herself on the spot.
Oh, no.
I'm glad I was not Sheriff Howard Wells that day.
Mm.
I might have left the room for a minute. Susan Smith wrote out a confession. She claimed that she had been suicidal on the night of October the 25th and was planning to kill herself along with the boys by driving her car into John D. Smith Lake. But Susan said as the car rolled down the ramp one last time, she pulled up the emergency brake, got out of the car, reached back in and re-released the emergency brake, and covered her ears so she wouldn't hear the car roll into the water.
Mm-mm.
After the confession, The sheriff's department divers finally found the car in 18 feet of water, 120 feet out from the shoreline. They just hadn't searched far enough.
Yeah.
The boys' bodies were dangling upside down in their car seats, still, one tiny hand pressed against a window.
Oh, no.
A recreation conducted by investigators for the trial showed that it took 6 minutes for Susan Smith's car to sink.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
And just in case you're not furious enough already, if you're wearing a belt, take it off and put it between your teeth because you're going to want to clinch on this one. David Smith said that his three-year-old son, Michael, hated the water, cried every time he got his hair washed in the bathtub. There was no bond hearing. So 23-year-old Susan Smith sat in jail during her son's funerals, which took place on Sunday, November the 6th, 1994. At their father's direction, Michael and Alexander were buried together in a single casket.
Yeah.
The entire town of Union, population around 10,000, and particularly the black community, felt betrayed, and the rest of the country was ready to lynch Susan Smith on the spot. And if I haven't already given it away, myself included. Mm. Not a very good job of being an impartial journalist. But yeah, where's the switch? And how do I turn it on? Mm. Susan Smith was indicted in December of 1994, and her trial began in July of 1995, at the same exact time in the world that the O.J. Simpson case was happening.
So that's why it's not big news anymore, right?
She was happy. Well, they were both on Court TV. I would imagine. I don't remember. I know that my mom religiously watched Court TV at the time, and we all watched the O.J. case.
I just remember the O.J. case happening during
O.J.
this time.
It overshadowed Los Angeles. Sure. O.J.'s in California. Susan Smith is over in rural South Carolina.
Yeah.
Prosecutors in Union County, South Carolina, sought the death penalty for Susan Smith. Mm-hmm. There was intense media coverage, not as intense as OJ, as you might imagine. Yeah. But her defense team did not seek a change of venue. Katie, I'm curious to know what you think about this, because they figured that they would be better off in a small community where everybody knew the family than to move the case, the trial, 100 miles away, where she would just be an evil witch of a woman. They thought they would get a little bit more sympathy in their hometown.
Yeah.
I definitely see that play.
They would see her as less of a monster than people, total strangers.
If I'd known her whole life, she couldn't have done
exactly this
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what are the demographics of this small town? Because like you get to a bigger city and you have more black people on the jury.
They look like Susan, I'm sure.
They're white. Let me think. There were 12 people on the jury. There were eight women and four men, and it was, I think, maybe five of the jurors were black.
Okay, that's more than I would think. Pretty diverse jury. Yeah.
Okay. I think that probably reflects the community.
Probably the percentages in the community.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a jury of 17 was chosen and sequestered. I'm sorry, a jury was chosen and sequestered local residents. Mm-hmm. Susan Smith's case began and ended, trial began and ended in 17 days. I knew there was a 17 in there somewhere.
17 days.
Sequestered. Poor jurors.
Mm. Investigators testified that they were suspicious of Susan Smith from the beginning, Kelly, like you suspected. They described a woman who cried without shedding tears.
Yeah.
Who seemed more interested in how she looked on TV than in getting her sons back, and who spoke about going to the beach to get away from reporters. The prosecution was determined to show that Susan Smith's motive for killing the children, that she had a motive, even though they weren't required to do so in the state of South Carolina. Because, first of all, she'd signed a written confession.
Mm-hmm.
But the prosecution's attempt at proving that she had a motive, which was the one we discussed earlier, she wanted to marry her, she wanted to get with the guy she was having the affair with, and he didn't like kids. But when the prosecution wanted to prove that she had a motive, it allowed the defense to claim that she was a loving mother who had been hospitalized in the past for suicidal thoughts, which was true. But when they opened the door, they were able to bring in her past, other aspects of her past.
So that's how that works then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's literally called opening the door.
Yeah.
Like, okay. If you bring it up yourself, then they can
Because her father had committed suicide when she was 6 years old, and she'd been sexually abused by her stepfather when she was 15. She'd had suicidal thoughts before when she was 13. Her parents, a psychiatrist wanted to put her into a psychiatric hospital, but her parents refused to let her go.
In hindsight's 2020, and yeah. She should have got some help, obviously.
So basically, the defense argument was that Susan Smith isn't lying when she said that she intended to kill herself too. She's obviously emotionally disturbed. She chickened out at the last minute. Survival instinct kicked in is, I think, the phrase they used.
Yeah, that's very plausible.
And so here is one last paragraph from Rick Bragg's book, Somebody Told You, from the section titled Susan. This is from July the 29th, 1995, New York Times. A jury decided today that Susan Smith should not be put to death for the drowning of her two sons and instead should spend the rest of her life in prison to remember. It took the jury 2.5 hours to reject the prosecution request for the death penalty and settle on the life sentence. The jury voted 9-3 for life. And it only takes one in South Carolina. If one votes life, then that's it.
Yeah.
It's
got to be unanimous.
It's got to be unanimous.
I don't know if I don't agree with the jury on that and think that that's worse.
Some things are worse than death.
I think that that was probably giving her a life sentence was what they thought was the worst punishment the two. Yeah, I think so. But in Bragg's written words, we hear that victory for the defense, in a sense.
Well,
for the penalty phase, because that's a separate thing. They, you know, first the guilt or innocence, and then the criminal or the penalty phase. Mm-hmm. They unanimously voted to sentence her to life in prison with the possibility of parole in 30 years.
Wow, really?
Check your calendars.
Oh,
today
yeah,
is November the 13th, 2024. She's up for parole 1 week from today.
Oh, my Lord.
November the 20th, 2024, Susan Smith is up for parole in the state of South Carolina. Now, according to my research, parole in South Carolina is only granted about 8% of the time, and it is less likely on an inmate's first appearance before the board. In notorious cases, or when prosecutors and the families of victims are strongly opposed, and that is all expected to happen.
Yes.
When that comes up.
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is a formality.
Yeah, I think it is too.
Good Lord, those children would be 31 would be 33.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one is like a few months older than me.
They would be grown men.
Yeah.
With families of their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Susan Smith is 53 today. So, I was watching this documentary on Netflix yesterday, and it is about artificial intelligence and ChatGTP. Have you guys used that at all?
Yes.
GPT. I knew I was going to say that backwards.
Yes, I have.
I have barely ever tinkered with it. And
oh, it's
so
magical.
I asked it. I have never used it to prepare for this podcast before, but I did just briefly yesterday. I asked it, hey, what do you think Susan Smith's chances are for parole?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And here's what ChatGPT said to me. Smith's potential release has generated strong public opposition, particularly from her ex-husband, David Smith, who has been vocal about the fact that he wants her to remain incarcerated. Her behavior in prison, including disciplinary issues as recently as October, may negatively impact her chances after she was found in violation of rules for unauthorized communication about a potential documentary film.
Mm-hmm.
2/3 of the parole board will have to vote for her release in order for it to be granted, given public sentiment and her recent infractions. Experts consider it highly unlikely that Susan Smith will be granted parole on November the 20th.
Dang, that's a good answer.
I agree with the AI.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah, it will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna get lazy on you guys, I promise. I'm not gonna start using Chat. Whatever it is.
GPT.
Yeah, you're not even
and
gonna
I learned
be able to
what
find
those,
it. Yeah.
I learned what those that acronym stands for this morning or yesterday, but I've already forgotten.
I've never looked it up.
No idea.
But there are three different aspects of how AI works, and one is G's for general and P is for, I forget.
I don't know. AI does make me nervous.
Yeah.
But I have.
Watch this documentary and it'll make you more nervous.
Well, I have I have used it though, but
Bill
for
Gates.
Things like recipes.
Yeah. Yes. Bill Gates hosts this 5-part series, and the first one's about artificial intelligence. It's very mind blowing.
I'm not real into Bill Gates. That's like my whole other soapbox, though. Uh-oh. But don't get to talking about AI with Shane, or you will want to drive yourself into a lake. Like, it's
really? He knows too much?
No, he's just very into it. Uh-oh. But like, and I'm like, no, it's, you know, there's a point where it's going to be dangerous. And he's like,
I agree.
And he's like, humans can't stop themselves, so we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, he's right about that.
And then I'm like, well, we should like work to not get there. And he's like,
that's what Bill Gates says.
And he's like, you know, it's just impossible. If it's impossible. And then we go in circles.
Yeah, he said that too. Bill Gates did. He said, we've got to do that, but we're probably not going to.
He's so Star Trek obsessed and all the things. And he's like, you know, any movie you've ever seen about AI, you know, we get to a point and they take us over.
Yep. It's a bad thing usually.
Yeah, Terminator, Battlestar Galactica. Yeah. I mean, that's it. It's,
you know,
it's
Elon just made those robots. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, we've got to have one. I said, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
And they're too cheap. Now, this is going to sound terrible, but like, I mean, like they're like $40,000. Like, they're like the price of a car.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what do they do?
Everything.
Everything that a human does.
Like, I think that's the goal. I don't know where they're at in the development, they can do your laundry. They can cook for you. They can clean for you.
My mind has already gone to the dark places that we're going to see in the news.
One of the videos I saw was like, it might, you know, could probably watch your children.
No, don't do that, people.
Well, just,
come on.
Just the one thing that scared me the most about what they said in this documentary, and I'll stop, but they said what's scary about AI is eventually AI is going to be, first of all, it's going to be smarter than we are. And then it's going to go, well, wait a minute. I can build a much better AI than they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got third generation AI built by AI. And then it grows exponentially smarter.
Yeah. Everybody saw that not very good, scary movie, Megan, right?
I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
Well, it's the same thing. Yeah. I mean, she starts knowing more than the person. Yeah. She gets attached to the little girl. And when they try to discipline the little girl, Megan's like, no.
I got you.
You know, she knows better of how to deal with the little girl than they do.
So then
we're off the rails at that point.
That's right.
So when I have to move out of my house because there's a robot there, y'all just get prepared.
All right.
How long is it going to be before we have like a Big Bang Theory situation? Remember when he had the robot arm stuck somewhere and had to go to the emergency room?
Yeah.
Gear up, hospitals.
Probably. Oh, that's probably already happening.
Already happened. I was going to say the same thing. All right. So there was an interview with the guy who was the lead prosecutor as we wind this thing down today in the Susan Smith case. His name was Tommy Pope. Today, he is the Speaker of the House of Representatives for the state of South Carolina. But he said the jury believed that she got a life sentence and that's what she should serve, basically.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, it's been 30 years, so she gets her day in court, so to speak, because that was the sentence that she received.
Yeah. Procedure.
Mm-hmm.
But Pope says that he plans to tell the parole board that when jurors rejected the death penalty, they thought a life sentence meant the rest of her life and did not think too much about the 30 years. So there's going to be plenty of arguments against Susan Smith getting out when that time comes in
definitely.
A few days.
I will be very shocked if she were to get parole.
But one last thing. Pope said that he expects Susan Smith to make her own argument to the parole board. And he said she's been rehearsing what she's going to say for 30 years.
Mm, definitely.
So, I don't know. We'll have an update.
I'm ready for the update, Scott. I'm excited for you to tell us.
Yeah. Know, get some closure on this, perhaps, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's it today. If you have something nice to say about us, you know how to do it. Go to Facebook. Mm-hmm. Say it on Spotify. Like somebody who did not leave their name did last week.
They left their name.
So the mistake was made in this room.
Yes.
Instead of some
always.
Other room.
Yes. Always.
I got it now. Mm-hmm. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes.
Yes.
And if you leave your name, we'll give you a shout out on a future episode of the show. Visit our page on Facebook, our website page.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of other stuff we could tell. Kelly, you want to say anything?
No.
Is that it, guys? Are we done?
That's done.
Good night, everybody.